Archbishop Dermot Martin, we're at the end of this three-week Synod of Bishops. How much do you feel that the final message and the propositions really reflect the work that's gone on here over the past 3 weeks?
I think they certainly do that. They try to bring together various threads and trends that have been spoken about. It's very difficult to do that in a simplistic way when the members of the Synod come from so many different parts of the world. In one of the small groups, there were 22 nations present, and the situation is quite different from one country to the next. But I believe that most of the themes that have come out in the groups find their place in the message and in the propositions. There's always a difficulty that some of the areas where there hasn't been agreement may have been left aside because of that fact, and yet those themes are themes that require maybe more attention so that they can be properly developed and set into the pastoral plans of the churches around the world.
Can you give us any examples of where there wasn't agreement?
There are certain challenges that each local church has, and they may not appear around the world. One example is a lot of talk about the role of catechists, but when you got down to it, then you found out that the definition or what the catechist actually was in one part of the world was quite different to that in another part of the world. And this made it difficult to make a generalised statement about that. In some places, catechists may be somebody who teaches catechism. In many places in Africa, they're actually the leader of a small community, which may not have a priest. But I think this is one of the ones that will be developed in the future. It's not that something was left out in a sort of a deliberate way or put aside. And this is part of the dynamic and the history of the Synod, that from the time of the Synod on evangelization in 1975, it became very clear that the bishops can't in just 3 weeks come up with ready-made answers to questions. It would be foolish and unrealistic to try and do that. And the idea of the propositions, which are questions, indications, which leave the Pope and the General Council of the Synod the possibility to develop them on the basis of everything that was said within these weeks, and some of the preparatory documents as well.
We heard several of the bishops during the Synod speaking about the difficulties of evangelising in a context where the churches have been devastated by the abuse crisis, including your native Ireland. I don't see much of this reflected in the documents.
Certainly, the scandals within the church, infidelity and weakness on the part of Christians and including leaders within the church, is one of the signs of contradiction that alienate people from the church. That was certainly part of the problem in Ireland. The Synod, in its propositions, hasn't been looking at an analysis of what has happened, but rather a broader vision of what evangelization would look like in the future. It's up then to each local church to address it within that context. So I don't think it was the task of the Synod to analyse some of the problems of the past. There's no way in which you can naturally move forward without analysing and addressing the realities that took place. Also because the question of abuse is never something of the past. It's about people who are living their lives who have been abused and bear that abuse within them and will continue to bear that within them for the rest of their lives. Certainly in Ireland, there are many more people coming forward who are abused and who, reflecting on the response of the church, said that the spiritual dimensions of their crisis were not adequately identified. And this is certainly something that part of the programme of the Synod should be looking at. Anybody who's been wounded or estranged within the church or from the church needs to have that real sense of new evangelization, of bringing the message of Jesus Christ to them in a way that they can live it in the circumstances where they find themselves.
Has this 3 weeks' work, though, been helpful to you, your own personal situation there in the church in Ireland, do you think?
I've constantly been saying that the big challenge of the church in Ireland is the challenge of new evangelization. The process of secularization which has taken place in Irish society was addressed far too late and may still not be properly addressed. We have, on the one hand, strong vestiges, remnants of a past strong faith, and that they're still very important to be built on. We have parents who may not be regularly practicing, but who do want their children to receive what was important to them about their faith. But we also have to address the problems of tomorrow with a new vigour and a new dynamism. And it comes back to basically the centre of our faith. In a society like Ireland, where the faith was supported by huge social and cultural infrastructure, as that social and cultural infrastructure begins to weaken and at times vanish, then the challenge of education in the faith becomes one of speaking to people who may not have the basic understanding of what faith in Jesus Christ is about.
You spoke also about the importance of language, or indeed the manipulation of language, and the importance that the church tackles this. What exactly did you mean by that?
English is an unusual language. It's a very there's a creative use of language, and sometimes the meaning of language is changed for ideological, even commercial purposes. This doesn't happen quite to the same extent in other languages. So it's very important that people develop a language of faith which is not entirely relativist and can change, just as one can change. I gave an example in the area of marriage and family, but right throughout our society, language seems to be changing its meaning, and therefore how do you understand the analogies that there are with the faith in the language that is available to people? And how do you talk about the transcendent in a language which doesn't have, tries to reference everything within what is actually taking place, and where the objectivity of language is challenged? It's a large cultural problem when you look at the language we have to explain the faith. What does fidelity mean? Not just within marriage, but very often the relationship between the human beings and God is also explained in that same language.
Do you feel that the church is doing this, that it is being able to come up with a language that people today really understand?
Not always. A huge, much more attention has to be given to that, to try and help particularly young people understand a language of faith, a vocabulary of faith. You hear people saying that even those who have gone into Catholic schools come away without that understanding of faith. This can be, for example, in areas simply like the common prayers, but also the use of a language in the church which isn't easy to slip into superficial categories. There's a certain amount of what's called spin in the whole way we live, and we're all victims of this. And you can't spin the message of Jesus Christ. It's too deep. And the challenge is actually to help people in the midst of the superficiality of the world to stop and ask the deeper questions. Now, many are doing that, but they may not find the answer, or even they're not being equipped to carry out that dialogue between the way society thinks and the depth of the message of Jesus Christ.
You spoke also very movingly about the importance of ecumenical relations, yeah. In particular the support in helping you personally, but the whole church also overcome the abuse crisis.
Yeah, certainly at a very difficult period of time for me personally. I was greatly supported by the Church of Ireland Archbishops and in our Eucharistic Congress, which could have been a divisive event in the life of the church in Ireland. The leaders of the other churches fully understood and worked with us on this event and fully rejoiced at the success, what was an event of the Catholic Church, and fully rejoiced in the fact that the Catholic Church in Ireland came out strengthened from the Eucharistic Congress. And I think there we learned something about the ability through a collegiality or to an ecumenism of effect and affection, where you can actually come closer to one another and talk about things that divide in a different way.
Finally, what then does give you most hope about the church in Ireland today? Where do you see signs of recovery, of healing, of new hope?
The Eucharistic Congress was an example of where you could find them, and there were two or three things that were particularly striking for me. One was the fact that the workshops, the conferences on faith and on living the faith in the world were all full to overflowing, which shows that there's a real felt need of Catholics in Ireland to develop and deepen their faith. And the leadership of the church has now to find the ways to ensure that they receive that. The National Directory of Catechesis, which was published 2 years ago, gives a broad programme of faith education, which would begin from the moment parents present their child to baptism right until people in their later years can develop their faith. But that hasn't as yet broken into what I would call the mainstream of catechesis, or the establishment of catechesis. We have placed so much emphasis on faith education in the schools that we haven't devoted our time to faith education for adults. Now, when I talk about faith education for adults, I mean not just another age category, as opposed to children, young people, adults, elderly, but about an education that is adult in its style, which addresses adults as adults and helps them to live the challenge of faith in the adult world in which they live. We are making beginnings in that. There's a new interest in that, but we still have a long way to go.